Hello, guys. Season's greetings and welcome back to the Football Diary podcast once again. I've been away for a little while during this hectic festive period, but the games have continued relentlessly. Some absolute crackers on Boxing Day, which we'll discuss in a moment. And also quite a few cancelled with the effect of COVID on sport lately, wreaking havoc really to the fixture congestion list. And a few question marks really about player welfare, a few managers quite angry about the Premier League's decision to continue playing. So we'll chew through all of that as well. I'm joined here by Miles and Dave today. So feels like it's been a while since it's been the three of us, to be honest. How are you, Miles, first of all? You had a good festive period so far?
Yeah, I just missed the hosting duties, really. You've come back and taken my spot, really. I've been relegated again. But
No, don't see it like that. We'll change. You've been an able stand-in, to be honest, mate. Thank you for that. And Dave, how are you, mate? You've been enjoying yourself adequately this festive period?
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time with the family. Relaxing chaos.
Yeah, pretty good way of putting it, I think, isn't it? And I'm sure Premier League players feel the same with the fixture schedule at the minute. So that's where we'll start, really. Quite a few games cancelled.
Love that. Seamless link, there, mate.
That's why I'm host, mate. It is a crazy period anyway, the festive period, isn't it, for the football calendar? But with cancellations through COVID, it's kind of ramped up another level. And there's three games cancelled on Boxing Day that were meant to go ahead. And obviously, they're all COVID-related. A lot of players missing from a lot of squads on match days this last few weeks. The impact of COVID's been massive this season, hasn't it? It's been, especially in the last few weeks, something that I think managers have got really sort of upset about, because player welfare has become central, really, to whether games continue. But the Premier League have voted that, yes, it should. You need 13 players and a goalkeeper to continue. And with squad sizes, that's not an issue these days. So then there's the question of, should teams carry on playing with squads the size they are? Are players risking themselves and their families by continuing to train together, travel together when they go home for Christmas as well? So there's a few question marks there. Thomas Tuchel in particular was pretty angry about the way Chelsea had to sort of field Mateo Kovacic straight after he'd bounced back from COVID himself. And it's difficult. It's taking its toll on players, on their bodies. How do you feel about it, Miles? Is this something that players should just get on with because they're well-paid players? Or should we genuinely be concerned about the effect on their welfare?
It is a difficult one to kind of find the balance of judgment on, because there's part of you that does think it's the same in any walk of life right now. Unfortunately, the reality is, well, the world kind of has to go on and your work life has to continue despite the challenges that we all face. And we all have to navigate the pandemic in our own workplaces. So you kind of extend that onto these footballers as well. However, when the amount of effort that goes into elite sports and the strain that it has on someone's physical health at this point in time, there is obviously an underlying question there of the responsibility of these people and the safety of these people and how it can have some really diabolical effects. I remember in the first wave of the pandemic, Newcastle were hit incredibly badly and some of the players there were really, really ill. And there is obviously that balance of finding where the responsibility lies in terms of protecting them because they're footballers, and then also this responsibility of them to continue because they're footballers. It's a paradox, really, that no one can really win. The problem that we have is, if we're honest, none of the decisions are being made because of anyone's welfare, be it the fans, the players, the staff, anyone. It's being made because we've overly congested the football fixtures and the calendar already. We've added in a World Cup in the middle of winter next year as well, so we have to finish this season slightly earlier. And all of a sudden, the more games that get cancelled, the harder it is to fulfill these fixtures. Look at Spurs. Spurs now can't fulfill a fixture and have been kicked out of a European competition. And no one wants to see football move that way, where a team are eliminated from a competition based on non-footballing reasons that are out of their control. So there's not much justice involved or fairness in any of this. And unfortunately, I think we all kind of thought we'd seen the back of this problem. And by this season, we were all going to be able to navigate it, continue with football, and everyone could just enjoy the Premier League again with fans back at last. And now it looks like maybe that was a step in the wrong direction. And do we have to think about a wider picture of, should this be behind closed doors again? Should we be looking at a winter break or a circuit breaker in between? It's so impossible to get the right answer. But if we're honest, the people who are giving the answers are the wrong people. So we're never going to get even close to it.
It's one of those seasons, I think, where there'll always be like a little footnote to the way the season finishes, because a lot of teams will either fall away this festive period because they can't field big enough squads. There's a question as to whether games in hand is like an advantage for some teams because they can see the path ahead. I'm sure they want to play their fixtures. I'm sure they don't want to sit out and let other teams keep playing and keep accruing points. I'm sure it's not that straightforward in the players' and managers' minds. But Dave, if you were a Premier League footballer now and you could see your teammates falling one by one, getting ill or being positive for COVID and not being able to take part in training and playing the games, would you feel it's me next, it's my family next, I'm at risk? I mean, what goes through a player's mind, do you think, when this kind of situation gets worse?
I think it's difficult because there's obviously, you know, when COVID kind of was in first circulation, there was obviously the bubbles that were put into place. And I think almost the Premier League probably acted a little bit too late in potentially reintroducing some, you know, some precautionary rules that probably should have been put into place really when we were starting to see this spike in cases. But I mean, another thing I was thinking about is this time of year anyway, especially when the fixture congestion is, you know, as rife as it is, you know, I think clubs would often be worrying about injuries. And you think about those obviously added to, you know, the COVID cases as well. Now you can understand why there's obviously a lot of worry really on the manager's mind. I can imagine it is a huge stress really for all managers, because they're having to deal with, you know, injuries as well as, you know, COVID cases and the accumulation of just, you can just imagine it is particularly tiring for players to have to worry about these, you know, these measures and being, you know, taking a bit of extra care, especially over the Christmas period when, you know, there's not really any regulations in place at the moment for, you know, the general public. So there's a bit of confusion there as to just how careful you have to be, I suppose. But I imagine the clubs have got, you know, rules in place, their own, you know, rules to give them extra protection. As a player, it would be worrying. And to be honest, we've seen a lot of clubs hit, you know, be hit by it a little bit worse than others. Obviously, we've seen United had two games postponed and are three games behind Arsenal now, I think. And I think Tottenham still have a couple of games in hand as well. I don't know whether I agree with it's an advantage. Personally, I prefer to have the points on the board because this time you know, 3 points is guaranteed. So I think Arsenal are in a good position, really. And obviously, I think, is it Burnley have got how many games in hand on Norwich?
Yeah, similar. It's about two games, I think, for Burnley as well. But then, what were you going to say, Miles? You were going to add to that?
Yeah, you look at like Liverpool, for example. They've had a game cancelled. And now let's say that fixture is rearranged during the African Cup of Nations and that's another game they've got to play where they're missing at least two of their key players. All of a sudden, we could be seeing the title race decided on a technicality. That doesn't seem just either. And it's really hard for clubs to follow every protocol, because there's also reports that there's up to, I think I read up to 16% of Premier League players are completely unvaccinated. And I think it's 23% haven't fulfilled both vaccines. So you then have players who are unable to fulfill fixtures, not because they've got COVID themselves, but because their isolation rules are different to someone else's. And it's just this really awkward position for clubs to try and navigate in order to fulfill fixtures based on the fact that they haven't really got much other choice.
Yeah.
What is the answer, though? Because with this World Cup coming, you have to get it done unless you just write the season off at some point. Mm-hmm. How many games need to be cancelled before they go, we can't fit these in anywhere?
The thing is, I was surprised to see the Carabao Cup carry on. I honestly thought that would take a backseat because
two legs,
it's not up there, is it, really? You could have easily put those on a back burner and continued the Carabao Cup at any stage. I think in Scotland, they continued their League Cup final literally a season later. I'm sure the women's game did similar as well for the FA Cup.
So, they did.
it's doable, but they've chosen not to because that's just what the Premier League does. It's the machine that keeps on moving.
I think the interesting thing that I read about is, I don't know whether there's an answer to it, is when the Champions League comes back into play, and obviously you've got all these countries that have got different rules on vaccinations, yeah. Where do players stand on that if they're not vaccinated?
Yeah.
Well, look at what happened at Bayern. Bayern Munich had 4 of their key players out for a couple of games because they weren't vaccinated, not because they had COVID. And the club were furious about it and released a statement sort of chastising these players. And that seems unjust as well. Look, whatever your stance is on the vaccine and how you feel about it, it is odd, isn't it, to then start to see these players kind of being publicly judged based on their own stance. It's a bizarre situation for anyone to have to deal with. But again, the authorities that should be dealing with it don't know how to, because they've accepted as much money as they can to get as many things and as many balls rolling as possible. They got their finger in too many pies, and now they have to keep going. So they can't pull out of the Carabao Cup because the sponsorship's too high. They can't delay Qatar because the amount of money that's gone into that as well. So there's all of these problems that just, after a while, you think, well, there isn't an answer to this. And the people that suffer aren't going to be the people that have caused the problem. Instead, it's going to be the individuals on the pitch or the fans who are traveling all the way to Burnley from London to find out that the game's postponed a couple of hours before kickoff.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely shocking.
And I think there's definitely different advantages and disadvantages to certain players and certain managers not being on the touchline or on the pitch. Like Steven Gerrard obviously contracted it this weekend, so he's been off the sidelines. Whether that's a disadvantage or not, we'll never know. But he's got to go back to his family and just self-isolate. You know, that must be a horrible feeling over the festive period. So,
especially with Villa, when you look at, you've got a new manager there who's trying to get a run of form going, and Chelsea really weren't in the best form before we lined up. Now, I know that they've had their problems with COVID as well, so it does balance out. But to not have your manager, McGinn wasn't there, Ashley Young wasn't there, Leon Bailey wasn't there, but we still play the fixture. And Chelsea had exactly the same problem the other week, to be fair to them. It's just nuts. You're not seeing football at its best. You're not witnessing the best product possible, which is what the Premier League is all about, because you're missing all your star players for a reason that isn't an injury. It can't be helped. No one else is penalised for having COVID, really. If I have time off work, you could argue that maybe the people I teach would be penalised by having a supply teacher, but the rest of my colleagues might have a bit more work because of what they do, but I wouldn't be penalised for it. I can't help it, but it does seem like the footballers are, and that's one thing that's a weird balance.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on them and the football industry as a whole to just keep the fixtures moving, isn't there, which is skewed everything, really. But moving on to the actual football, Boxing Day didn't disappoint. It's always a strange one, isn't it? It throws up a lot of goals traditionally. And the first game I want to talk about is Man City 6, Leicester City 3. Absolute classic of a game for weird reasons as well, because some of the goals that came about were completely unforced. And I think Leicester City shot themselves in the foot massively, didn't they? Conceding a couple of penalties, conceding a couple of set pieces again, rallying a comeback as well to make it 4-3 at one point. Dave, did you see much of the match, and what was your take on this crazy game?
I mean, the story of late of Leicester is, you know, they've been guilty of making errors collectively as a team and individual errors that caused them to concede goals, and it was more of the same, really. Obviously, we've already spoke about that, you know, the two mistakes from Tielemans and two set pieces, and how many set pieces have they conceded this season?
12, I think it's the top of the table, if you can call it that. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, Leicester obviously definitely played their part offensively and defensively for the wrong reasons defensively. But I think the goals that Leicester did score, particularly their first two, they were probably the best goals of the game.
Yeah.
On the break, they looked brilliant to watch. Madison's really starting to come into his own the last few games or so. So, I mean, another player, Iheanacho, against his former team, he had very few touches. I think he had about 19 touches or something the whole game. And
two assists, though.
He had a real impact. You've got to say, obviously, they're still struggling, Leicester, especially with their defence. It's a bit of a makeshift defence they've got in there at the moment. And that's, you know, when that will be will be fixed, who knows. One bonus that I did hear about is that James Justin back in training now, which will be really good to see him come back into the team when he does.
Fantastic work.
But again, I mean, what are your thoughts on Leicester, the enigma that is Leicester at the moment?
Well, their defence, their standing defenders are just terrible. Like, Vestergaard's awful. And he's put a lot of faith in him as well. I think he shifted to a back five at one point, didn't he? And that made a difference, really. Leicester only really came back when he shifted the defensive setup. But going forward, like you say, Man City struggle to deal with a counter-attacking team of Leicester's sort of quality, really. It's normally Jamie Vardy that causes them all sorts of problems. But I thought Lookman was great. I really did. What was your take on it, Miles? Can you see City looking like title favourites now, or are there still too many question marks for you?
It's hard to judge because of the situation that's going on. Obviously, Liverpool not playing, Chelsea hitting weird runs of form, but City did look very ruthless at times. But then they conceded three in this game, and you never know what that means. They've only conceded 12 all season, so for Leicester to get three against them is fantastic. But if you're going to concede six, three of them as a result of set pieces again. I know one of them ended up being a penalty from a corner, but it's just shocking. Leicester have got to look at this January transfer window, and the best business they can do will be to bring in a set piece coach. They don't have one. And at what point does Brendan Rodgers look at that and go, need to address this? Because 12 goals, it's shocking. Yeah. And I worry with Leicester that, you can talk about the injuries they've had this season, but you're putting a lot of stock in the fact that Wesley Fofana would deal with this problem on his own. And I don't think that's true. So what is going wrong? Has this team reached the end of its cycle? Has Brendan Rodgers taken them just as far as he can get them and just can't break that top four? And therefore, they need to do something different or just settle for the fact that they're going to be a Europa League sort of side or not. I wonder whether Rodgers will walk away, if I'm 100% honest, because I feel like his stock is still at a point where if he left now, he'd get a big job somewhere. If he fails with Leicester this season and they don't win the Conference League and they don't qualify for Europe, all of a sudden people will start to ask questions about him again and say, well, actually, he should have got fourth with Leicester and didn't. He was only doing well in Scotland when Rangers weren't around. So now they'll question him again. He's been linked with the Man United job before that. So I wonder whether it's time for all of them to go, I think we could all do better from a bit of a change here, because that defensive line just needs so much help.
I think
in terms of squad depth, though, and squad value and kind of players that they've got, isn't sort of seventh, eighth place about where they're at, though, to be fair? They're kind of the seventh or eighth best squad in the country, right?
Are they going to get there, though? Are they going to get seventh or eighth if they keep going the way that they are?
Yeah, it's anywhere between seventh and tenth, isn't it, really? So top four, I think, is it was in touching distance a couple of seasons ago. But I think another thing, six have just got better.
Yeah, I think another thing that's worth mentioning is at the end of this season, you're going to have a number of players who might potentially be looking to move on. Obviously, there's Tillemans, who's been a lot of talk around him. When they'll be able to keep a hold of Ndidi, that's another thing. Vardy's coming to the end of, probably his career at the very top. It's going to be a big rebuild job, really, in reality.
Yeah.
And it's whether, like you say, Rodgers feels he can actually achieve that. And it's a big ask, really, to take them from where they were, obviously winning the FA Cup last season. I'd like to think and hope that Leicester fans will be show a bit of patience because, they've reached real heights, over these last few years and kind of absolutely out of nowhere. So,
but you've got a team here. You've got a team here that were battling for fourth two seasons in a row. They now sit in 10th and they're 3 points ahead of Everton in 15th, who everyone is talking about as having a crisis. That's one game. They're 6 points ahead of Leeds in 16th, who there's a lot of talk about them. And are they in a relegation battle? This could go really wrong for Leicester at a time when they can't afford it to. Because like Dave says, there are players that could leave. This is their moment where they need to build something because otherwise they will lose this cycle. And all that momentum from winning the FA Cup, winning the league a couple of seasons ago, that's gone. And I do worry for Leicester a little bit that they could just kind of fall into obscurity, whereas they looked like the ones that were going to be there to disrupt the big boys of the league and kind of get their noses into the battle every now and again. They're so far off that this season. I saw that they were lined up with Luca Dean from Everton in January as well, because he's not getting as much game time as you'd expect, which would be an outstanding signing. I think he's a fantastic player. But other than that, what can Leicester do to save their season at this point? I'm not sure anymore.
Well, I still think that they've been overachieving for a few seasons. I think challenging for fourth place was punching above their weight. Winning the FA Cup was probably where they're about aiming for. The trophies are kind of the thing I think they should be pushing for. They're the kind of team that should pick off the scraps of the top teams resting players and taking advantage and going deep in competitions. Mm. They won the Premier League. Obviously, that was the biggest overachievement in football history, arguably. So I honestly think they need to be careful what they wish for, because they've got good team players, they've got good squad members, they've got a good manager, they've got a good stadium, good infrastructure. If they were to aim any higher than sort of eighth, seventh place and go anything below that is an absolute failure, they could slide into mediocrity if players start falling away. They need to sort of accept that that's kind of the level this season, maybe kick on next season. I do almost think this season's kind of written off in some ways.
Yeah, but you mentioned City as well. And when you look at the fact that they, even when they let those three goals in, they just went, right, we're going for the kill now. We won't let this fall off. And the depth that they do have is something to behold. I find it a bit mad that they've sold Ferran Torres already, though. Yeah. And I find it even more mad that Barcelona have got the money to buy someone, but that's a completely separate matter. But there was a lot of talk that they were looking at Ferran Torres as a number nine moving forward. So when you know that really they don't have someone that fills that gap. And I always think that whenever he played for City, he looked brilliant, Ferran Torres. He looked really lethal, and he does well for Spain as well. So it's a fantastic signing for Barcelona. But I think City will be confident that they've either got something else in the works to replace him, or they just have the depth that they're going to clean up now, because I think there's that 9 wins in a row now with City.
It is in the Premier League, and not only that, but they've suddenly decided to score goals. They've created chances since the start of the season, but we were saying a lack of number nine really let them down at the start, but they're banging them in at the minute against, you know, pretty decent opposition. So they've found the goal scoring touch with players that are kind of interchangeable in the front line as well, which is even scarier. You know, they had, was it no Foden this time?
Grealish. I don't think Grealish played either, did
it? No, Grealish as well. Yeah, the players that came in did a fantastic job. So that's quite daunting for the other challengers for the title. So does that change your position on this, Miles? Are you still saying that Chelsea are the favourites for you?
I'm not sure that Chelsea are the favourites anymore, purely because they're 6 points behind City now. So can you see City dropping 6 points and Chelsea not dropping anymore?
They look great, don't they?
It's difficult. It's difficult. I think Chelsea have been unfortunate with the fact that they obviously had injuries to Lukaku and Werner at the same time. Then they pretty much lost their whole midfield all at once. It's been a difficult one for them. Who knows? When the season gets a bit deeper and if City start really going for the Champions League, we could see things swing again. Yeah. Liverpool are obviously still very, very much in the conversation, even though they will sit 3 points behind City, even if they win their game in hand. So it's tight, and I'm glad that we have a title race. But yeah, right now, City probably look the most dominant team in the league, don't they?
They seem like they're streaking away in the way they did last season, really, because they had a tough start and then suddenly just won every game in a row over the same period, actually, wasn't it? So yeah, slightly daunting, I think, for their rivals. Dave, are you seeing things any differently at the top now?
No, like you say, they're really kind of starting to flourish now, especially in the last, you know, few game weeks. They've looked really strong, even against, you know, some of the top teams and some of the big games they've played. They've been dominant in that play, and like you say, they're creating chances and scoring goals. And if you're doing that, then obviously Pep did mention in his last press conference, you know, they've not gone in to buy a striker, but they need to go in and buy eventually. So, I mean, it looks like they've decided that they need a striker, and they've probably earmarked, you know, two or three potential players. Imagine Haaland's going to be one of them. So, you know, let's see what happens with that. I can well imagine that we know they were after Kane in the summer. We knew they were after Ronaldo in the summer. They didn't get either of those. So, It might turn out to be a good thing for them, really. If they get a younger, you know, fresher striker who's kind of going to be there more for the long term, you know, that's probably bad news for other teams.
Yeah. Because he was young as well.
Yeah, he was. Like you say there, he did look good, you know, in that City team. And he offers a lot of off-the-ball movement and, you know, pressing. He did suit that Man City team. It's just, you know, maybe they've just sensed an opportunity, Man City, there, that, you know, the player's not happy with the number of minutes he's getting. And, you know, the Barcelona have come in and offered such an amount of money, which, you know, they're going to make a good profit off of him as well. So, I mean, it's probably a win-win situation.
It looks like they're looking at Haaland, Vlahovic from Fiorentina, and potentially Alexander Isak from Sociedad, who are all young strikers with kind of similar profiles as well in terms of the way they play. They're big but pacey.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite an interesting way to see City move. But
I think compared to the front line they've got at the moment, where there's this false nine that interchanges, and they're all quite quick interchanging passing players, aren't they? Quite creative attacking midfielders. To suddenly stick quite a big, skillful centre forward in there would be interesting. I think Haaland would be the one that would actually strike fear into opposition players. Crazy. With him in that front line, he'd get so many chances, wouldn't he? So, but then so would Kane, then so would Isak, so would any of them that could go in there. No, I don't think Kane will go.
Kane's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it's looking daunting for the rest of the Premier League, that's for sure at the minute. Mm-hmm. But moving on to the top four now, actually. So obviously Arsenal beat Norwich 5-0. Impressive win, impressive run they're going through again. We've said this before, haven't we? Mm. So they're looking like probably the favourites, I think it's fair to say, for top four at the moment. But then also Tottenham have screened back into contention. They're doing okay now. Conte's turned them around quite nicely. They beat Palace 3-0 at home, which was another impressive victory for them. I'll start with you, Miles. Which of those two, I mean, we've not spoken about United either yet, but which of those two would you say is the most favourite position to be top four contenders? I mean, Tottenham have got a few games in hand. How do you see it?
I'm contractually obliged through marriage to say Arsenal over Tottenham. But I will say Tottenham are in a very good position with the games in hand that they have. If they win them, they will go into the top four, and Conte does seem to have got them clicking. Arsenal's run is really interesting because they're getting really good results from really young players, and that's an amazing thing. Over the course of a season, though, do you risk burnout with such a young squad, and will they be able to sustain this push until the end of the season? And the other thing with probably both these sides, but specifically with Arsenal, is they need to start winning games that you wouldn't expect them to win, or at least getting a point from those games. Because at the moment, a 5-0 win against Norwich is fantastic. That's their level. They should be getting a 5-0 win against Norwich. So I don't want to take anything away from a very good performance from a young side. But the testament of who makes the top four won't be decided by the games against Norwich, really. It'll be decided by how many points can you pick up from the teams around you. So the North London derby will be a massive, massive game. And then, of course, we still don't really know much about Ranić's Man United. There's been two league games, is that right, since Ranić's come in? 2-1-0 wins?
Yeah, so, particularly underwhelming so far, really, I think, as well.
Who knows what to expect there? They'll definitely be in the conversation come the end of the season as well. But it's nice that there's a lot of different races going on at once. I like that there's a bit of competition in there. I think Conte has obviously got some players clicking at Spurs, which is really good. Harry Kane scored a couple of goals now, which that'll do wonders for his confidence, because we know that he can go on streaks now. And Lucas Moura looks a completely different player again. We know that he's got that ability. You remember the Champions League semi-final that he got Spurs through single-handedly, basically. And we saw flashes of it at PSG and back when he was in Brazil as well. So it's really nice to see him kind of live up to what people wanted from him when he was moved to England. Son's obviously looking a bit brighter again as well. So Conte's definitely getting a tune out of his players, just as Arteta is now. He's finally got his own squad. And you have to say, they're doing all of this without Aubameyang, and it doesn't really seem to be a problem. The problem will be that they'll obviously be wasting that money, and you don't want to see them go down in an Ozil situation again. But both teams have got their strengths right now. Both teams have still got their worries. Tottenham, I think, lack a lot of depth in their midfield, not necessarily the most impressive, along with their defence as well, actually. But Arsenal kind of lack the experience in their side. Like, they really struggle to pick a captain. So it's two teams that are flawed, but have enough strengths that it's going to make an interesting battle for sure.
Yeah, I think with Arsenal as well, this is the second anniversary of Arteta taking charge. It's been 2 years to that game. And for context, they, at the same stage last season and the season before, they were 14th and 11th at this stage. So in terms of a marker for progress, you know, that's a stark contrast to where they were and where they are now. So massive improvements. But Dave, what can you see in Tottenham that's different? What kind of things do you think Conte has changed about the way they play and the kind of way they're grinding out results at the minute?
The one thing you can notice about them ever since he's kind of taken, you know, his place at the helm, maybe not necessarily in the first couple of games. Obviously, we saw them as an absolute shocker in Europe. And I think, you know, he's probably just getting to grips with his team and, you know, used to his methods. But we're seeing the intensity of them now is, you know, the stark difference between, you know, before and after. It's so apparent, you know, in the game against Liverpool, with, I think that was a big eye-opener for me, and some, you know, something really told me that, you know, they are going to compete for this fourth place, because they went toe-to-toe with Liverpool, and, you know, they could have been 2 or 3 nil up by half-time, and you wouldn't have said that was unfair. I think what another thing as well, the front players are starting to click again, and it sort of looked earlier on, obviously, under Nuno, you know, Kane looked a little bit disinterested. And he's actually starting to come to life again a little bit now. And one of them, the thing that you mentioned there, Miles, is about Lucas Moura. He's such a good player. And he did, you know, Mourinho actually rated him. And for some reason, he just didn't get game time at the beginning of this season. But he's brought him into the team. And yeah, they've got options there. And I think sometimes we forget about some of the players that Tottenham do possess, because they've got some really good players there. You know, their squad isn't actually that bad at all. Obviously, he's brought Skip in as well. I think it's about making players feel valued again. And Conte's come in and managed to kind of pull them all together and create a bit of unity about the players. Whereas it did seem so kind of, it seemed like it was kind of pulled apart at the seams, really, a large part of the season. It seemed like there was a lot of people who didn't want to be there. And, you know, we did think that was going to be an issue. But I feel like the derby is going to be, you know, a game to actually look forward to and look forward to watch again, because Arsenal are in form. Tottenham, you know, have come starting to play well at the right time. It could be, you know, good spectacle.
It's not necessarily surprising, though, because Conte's always had that kind of that old Jose Mourinho effect of making your players feel like they were going to war for you. And players always appreciate playing for Conte. And someone like Harry Kane, it's such a weird emotional roller coaster to go from being treated like Maurizio Pochettino's son, then going to Mourinho, where you never knew whether you were going to be his best mate or his worst enemy from 1 week to another. All right, Kane seemed to get on with him fairly well. Then Nuno came in and is so quiet that no one liked him, which is a weird dynamic. And now you've got Conte breathing down your neck. What a weird journey of managers. And it shows how kind of pointless Daniel Levy's plans are, because there's no logic or thought process to any of this. What would be really interesting to see is what Conte does in January, because he's only got a short contract. So are they going to give him license to refresh that squad? Because a lot of players need to move on. Definitely.
Yeah.
It seems to me that he's not going to get much opportunity to do that when he says things like Eric Dier could be one of the best centre backs in the world. That says to me, I've got to make the best of what I've got. So let me big this guy up a little bit. Apparently, he's made similar comments about Kane, saying that Kane won't go anywhere. He's crucial to the plans, and Kane's really bought into Conte as well. I think that's probably because he realises not much else is on the cards right now, so he kind of has to knuckle down a little bit. But it's a weird dynamic at Spurs still. And Dave's right, there are players there that you forget about. Steven Bergwijn is a very good footballer. We kind of don't really even think about him that much anymore. But I still think they're very top-heavy. And that Lloris is out of contract in the summer, if I'm right. Their defence, just Davinson Sanchez isn't the player that we thought he was going to be. Eric Dier has a rick in him. They got Roden, who seems to be great for Wales, but not really get much time at Spurs. So it's a weird mix, that squad. Yeah. It looks like it needs so much work.
Well, we said that at the start of the season, didn't we, that they look like a disaster waiting to happen. So I think to be in contention for top four is a real turnaround. And credit to Conte. It's how long he can keep this intensity going for, isn't it, though, really? Because his players are going to tire at this rate. I think the running stats show that under Nuno, they were 20th for miles or kilometres ran during his time or something like that. But since Conte's taken charge, they're at the top of that table now. So
yeah.
How long the manager's going to be happy for as well? Because like you mentioned there, Miles, short-term deal is on. You know, and we've seen come and go under, you know, Levy. And
well, Tuchel had a short-term deal as well. Maybe he elected for that. I don't know whether that's a new thing in football right now, whether just maybe it's the manager testing the water rather than the club. Maybe. I'm not sure. But I just look at it and I think United are still favourites for fourth, because although Arsenal are on a good run of form, like I said, that young squad, you wonder whether they'll sustain that come the end of the season. They're obviously benefiting from not being in any European competitions, but unless they pick up points off the big four, then that won't be successful. Spurs, like we say, there's so many errors in that squad still, whereas I feel like United might be able to capitalise on it now that they seem to have a bit more structure. I don't know. You guys have got a bit more of an insight on that, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, if we move on to United next and their prospects, I think I'm still very much feeling quite negative from the last couple of games we've seen. I mean, I know the approach has been different. We've looked a bit more steady and secure, but it's still been really uninspiring sometimes, hasn't it? So I still think United are the outsiders in that respect. I still think sixth place is kind of where United deserve to be at the minute. So Dave, tell me if you disagree, but I can't see them sneaking past Arsenal, especially. I think Arsenal at the minute are quite far ahead of where United are.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with the last game against Norwich. It was absolutely terrible. It was pretty much going back to square one. I feel the game before that, I felt as though, you know, the first half we looked like a completely different team. I think one thing to stand out for me is we're not conceding many chances. And I know that Norwich, you know, David De Gea had to make couple of really good saves in that. But if you look before that, we were conceding, you know, almost two goals a game. And with obviously, from what I understand from player interviews, De Gea's come out and Maguire's come out and is kind of obviously, Rangnick has come in and highlighted, you know, the fact that we are conceding way too many goals and addressing the basics first, you know, because...
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you can't really forget that he's come in a time when the fixture list is so congested. There's only so much you can do in so few training sessions, you know, in this particular period.
Well, their last game being postponed probably helped him weirdly, didn't it? And then the run of fixtures that United have got is so favourable at the moment. That, to me, that's their opportunity to just springboard themselves right back into the conversation. They got Newcastle tonight, who look at shambolic still. So,
well, that's the thing. I think they need to sort of start turning teams over like that in the way that, probably not the way Man City are, but certainly make it a 3-4-0 affair as opposed to making it a scraping a 1-0. And I think that's what I feel that we're doing at the moment. We're scraping victories, but not conceding goals, I guess, at the minute, which is a step in the right direction. But it's just whether we can be kind of cohesive going forward. That's the big question mark for me. And how he fits Ronaldo into all that. And, you know, where does Sancho play into it? What kind of midfield lineup does he prefer? I mean, he's not even had a chance to play Pogba yet either. So is he in his plans going forward, or is he eyeing the exit as well? Martial's obviously said this week that he wants to leave. So there's a bit of unrest, and there's a few players that might not be there in 6 months to a year's time. So he's got a few question marks over him. But top four, if we got that, would be an absolute miracle, I think.
I mean, yeah, like you say, still getting to know players as well. You know, in the little time he has had, I can imagine he's probably... you know, highlighted a few opportunity areas where we need to be looking to improve on. And, you know, the rumours that midfield is one of those. With, and the one thing I would trust him with is, you know, his ability to highlight potential, especially young players. I mean, you look at his track record, who he's, you know, he's looking, who's brought in, Konate, Upamecano, obviously the likes of, Naby Keita, Werner. You know, he's managed to highlight some real talent. And, you know, if we can look in it to kind of making, especially in January, a lot of teams are really kind of reluctant to kind of, you know, throw money at the market because they know that teams are looking to keep hold of players, especially midway through the season. If we can look to pick up the talented, you know, young talented players and just add to, you know, the squad, really, I'd be happy with that because I think it's probably unrealistic to kind of expect anything other than that, really.
Fair enough. Well, it seems like top four is probably more of a contentious kind of, it's not a foregone conclusion, basically, probably less than the title is, to be fair. Mm. So exciting nonetheless, even as somebody in the thick of it and a fan of a team in the thick of it, it looks like something we can actually get our teeth into, which is good.
I think the next fixtures, the next set of fixtures will be telling, really. I think Arsenal are facing Man City. So that'll be a big game for them and see kind of, you know, how they handle that. I mean,
well, they got absolutely smashed by Liverpool, didn't they? So, you know, we'll see. I want to touch on quickly, Miles, before we go, on Villa's game against Chelsea. Because obviously no Steven Gerrard on the touchline. We saw Danny Ings return to the lineup. We saw Morgan Sanson actually played his first game of the season, didn't he? So, and Jacob Ramsey's been in form for the last few games since Gerrard's been there. So there's a few kind of extra dimensions to the Villa team. But a bit like Leicester, really. Didn't they shoot themselves in the foot a little bit? Conceding penalties. It's just, I mean, they were ripe for the taking, Chelsea, weren't they, really?
Yeah, I mean, Lukaku came on and made a huge difference, as he is capable of. And I think that kind of decided the game for it. But it's frustrating when you score first. I think I read something like we've lost 11 games that we scored first in this calendar year now, and it's the most of any team in the competition. And that's so disappointing because you build up momentum and then just watch yourself take it all down yourself. Chelsea didn't really have to do much to get there. Cash is a wonderful player, but he has that in him. We've seen him give a few penalties away with silly challenges. And he knew as soon as he made the challenge, there was no disputing it. It was just, he didn't know he was there. He thought he had more time to get to the ball than he did. And it was silly. Concert, I don't really know what he was appealing either. It was clearly a penalty. So it's frustrating. You'd rather not see those silly little things. But again, it's a game against one of the bigger sides early in Gerrard's tenure, and he wasn't even there, where actually we did give a really good account of ourselves, particularly in the first half. We started really well. Once it went to 1-1 and even 2-1, Villa were on top to try and get back into it for a while as well. So I don't know. It's good to see some players getting back into the lineup. We were missing our best player by a distance so far this season in John McGinn. So it's not the worst result in the world, as silly as that sounds, to lose one. But that's me just trying to be positive, I think. So far, we've lost three games, and they're to the three people looking for the title right now. And I don't think you'd say we were blown away by any of them. So we'll see. I don't really know what to expect from the rest of this season.
No.
What I'm even hoping for. You never want to just hope for mid-table, but that's probably the level we're at right now. I can't see us getting into Europe this season.
Well, I was about to say, have your expectations changed now since Gerrard's taken over?
It's so hard to say because the league table is so congested. I mean, we've got 22 points. It's the same as Leicester. But we're only 6 points off West Ham, but we're also only 6 points, who are sixth, but we're 6 points off Leeds, who are 16th. So it's such a weird table to judge. A good run of form, and all of a sudden we're level on points with West Ham, who are starting to fall off. And we could compete for a European place. We could also equally find ourselves looking over our shoulder a bit more than we'd like. But I do have faith in the fact that we're playing really nice football. I think we look much better on the ball.
Do you think he knows what his best team is yet? Think he knows what his best setup is?
I don't think he's had it yet, is the other problem, because obviously he's always dealing with at least one very key player being out. Bertrand Traore only returned to the squad yesterday. Leon Bailey's out. Danny Ings was out when he first got there. He obviously now is dealing with McGinn and Ashley Young out. And I think the first 11 will change in January because he's definitely going to sign a midfielder. Nakamba's now got a long-term injury. So the talk is he's had the green light to bring in a centre midfielder. There's a couple of players he's looking at back from Rangers, but that'll be an interesting sign. So probably not yet, no. But I'm not sure there are many managers in the Premier League who know what their strongest 11 is right now, in all honesty, with the way that football's been over the last couple of years. and he seems to be getting good results out of everyone that features. We saw Carney Chukwuemeka come on again yesterday, and he's looking bright. And like you say, Jacob Ramsey, I talked about him on this podcast before and said he's just lacking any end product, so I don't really get his place in the team. He's already improved on that since Gerrard came in, and you can see him as almost Gerrard's pet project. He says he's been watching footage of Gerrard constantly, and they've been talking through about how to get more goals into his game and things. So that's great. So we'll see. I think I'm definitely more positive. We're definitely not going to be in any sort of trouble this season. I just really hope that we can just make progress. That's what we always want. If we can bring in one or two good players in January and get ourselves in the conversation for top eight, even if we ended up in the Conference League next year, I'd be so happy with that. It'd be brilliant. Yeah. Because that gives us a chance to have some sort of credentials again as well, and we deserve that. Some of the players in that squad really deserve that. You look at Emi Martinez, he came sixth in the Yashin Award, the sixth best goalkeeper in the world plays for our club.
That's great.
That's amazing. Let's get ourselves into a conversation where they can showcase their talent.
He had a very good second half, Martinez did.
Brilliant. Honestly, he's the best goalkeeper I've seen at Villa in my lifetime by some distance. Like, I think he's absolutely outstanding. He's been a revelation signing him. Like, that changed the squad, really, and really helped the defence. Like, Konsa was a really young centre-back when he first got into the team and still looked a bit iffy until Martinez was in the team. If you look at Cash, he was a winger, and he now is a solid right-back because they know they've got confidence in the person behind them for the first time in a really long time. So I absolutely love Martinez. I'm gutted he didn't manage to get psych out Jorginho, to be honest. He won that battle, didn't he? But
I fancied him, though. That's the thing. In those situations, even against Jorginho. You fancy him, don't you? It's the kind of play you want between the sticks, that's for sure. But Villa not playing this week now. Their game against Leeds has been postponed. So bit of a breather for them in the middle of the chaos. I think it's Arsenal Wolves as well is postponed at the minute as well.
Yeah.
The only other game, I think, is affected by COVID at the moment. But that changes daily, it feels like. So we'll see. But another massive run of fixtures coming up over the next week. And the next time we talk next week, hopefully, there'll be loads of different changes to the table to talk about. It feels like game week after game week, it could completely flip, doesn't it? So
probably be some big transfers as well, because there's already some really early moves in the market. Like, we talked about Ferran Torres moving to Barcelona. Jonathan Okoné is going to Fiorentina as well. There's talk of Kieran Trippier to Newcastle still. Lingard as well. Martial going to Sevilla. So it looks like clubs aren't waiting around to make this. And if their squads are thin right now, you can understand why they'd act quicker in a January market than they normally would. It'd be interesting. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
I think seeing Newcastle and what they do is going to be fascinating for me, to be fair. What they do with their money, if they manage to lure anybody in, will be really interesting.
And some big contracts still to be decided. If you look at some of the players that are out of contract in the summer, Mbappe's still not sorted, Dybala as well. I think Lorenzo Insigne is still not signed a new deal as well. So there's some big players that could already agree pre-contracts in January. It's going to be a good month for that.
Yeah,
Did you see, obviously, Wayne Rooney... Derby beat West Brom today, didn't they? 1-0. Can you imagine seeing him in the Premier League? Because they've done brilliant, really, despite the predicament of Derby. Yeah. They managed to stay up. That would be ridiculous. It's a
He's being linked with the Everton job, isn't he? If Benitez can't turn it around, apparently they're lining Rooney up again. I'm not sure that's where he should go. I think he should go somewhere completely separate to himself.
I don't think he could do any wrong in Derby at the moment. He can't really get any worse than being relegated, which is what people expect.
They've not got much hope, have they, really, I suppose. No. You know, he's managed to galvanise that team, and they're kind of not under any pressure, really.
I'm not sure about you guys. You saw a lot more of him on the pitch, probably, but I never earmarked him as a manager, Rooney.
I think he's more intelligent than you realise, that's the thing. And he's been studying the game quite a lot.
It's not any, I don't know what it is. I think personality, just, I imagine he's just too angry most of the time. Like, he reminds Zaha this weekend, that kind of petulance. We saw that from Rooney a few times in his career as well. And I just thought, I can't see him putting on a suit to go to Wembley or something.
He changed a lot in the end. He was quite a model pro towards the end of his career. He trained well. I'm glad it's going well. After his body finally, after years of just not. So I think he matured, yeah, to the point where he's definitely a leader on the pitch. In the end, he was captain, wasn't he? So, yeah, different man. But until next time, guys, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you for joining me in the middle of the festive period. Hope you're going to have a few days of festivities ahead still. And yeah, look forward to speaking to you next time, hopefully with a few more exciting games to talk about. But until then, thank you, guys. And thank you for watching. If you can, just hit that subscribe button for us on YouTube. Be a massive help as we try and grow our audience, really. So if you like what you hear, please come back next time. But until then, guys, thank you. Speak to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Dave. Cheers, Miles.